This week's episode of Heavy Meta is brought to you by Face-to-Face Games. If you like paper cards, that's the place to get them.
No. Ladies and gentlemen. For what?
Welcome to Heavy Meta, your source for magic news, entertainment, and comedy.
What is up, assholes? I'm Kevin Metal!
And I'm Raging Gumby.
I'm Chef Tony.
And I'm Tristan Gregson, and tonight on Heavy Meta, not only did we get the intro mostly in order tonight, I also put together some notes about things that happened in Magic that we may actually talk about, like, including F&M promos. Why are they still a thing? MTG finance and buying collections. I followed a very interesting story this last week that's laughable, but also is a chilling tale that you should be aware of. It's the first week of Kaladesh Standard. That's super exciting, so we can talk about it. Joey Bats. He did just hit a home run. The Blue Jays are up 1-0 in the O's wildcard game. Meanwhile, MTGO Set Redemption is an utter shit show because, privileges, that's why. And MTGO is even worse this week as we have included treasure chests, making it a digital game like every other digital game out there these days. But back to the top, F&M promos. I get asked about this, surprisingly a lot. Why do they suck so bad? Tony, you work in a game store. Why are they so shitty?
I wish I had a good answer for you because they're hit and miss, right? Sometimes they're great, sometimes they're not, and we can sort of recount the tales of the good ones, including game day promos, I think sort of fall in this category. The full art non-foil and the full art foils have been very, very hit or miss.
Yeah.
I remember back so far as Black Sun Zenith from Scars of Mirrodin, or Mirrodin Besiege, no, Scar, yeah, Mirrodin Besiege. Being the full art foil game day promo. Yeah, and that card was like sweet. That was awesome. And it was still not, you know, tier one playable in every deck. So they've done well with some of the arts on the cards where the cards are still just not really playable. Like, for example, something new, Spatial Contortion, the +3/-3. The art on that's fantastic. Even the expanded art is better. It's hilarious. But the card,
I just don't get
not
it.
Really playable.
I don't get it because, I mean, like you said, we've seen some good F&M promos before, but like, it's not like they don't, you know, at least have their finger on the pulse of what's, you know, like, what is played and what would be a good F&M promo. They know better, but for some reason it's like, it's obvious that they choose like to just throw some garbage out there too, when that's a good spot to start getting some nice cards. And I'm not talking like a, you know, tier one fucking super powerful fucking expensive cards and injecting some more into the market that way.
But
I'm
why not?
Just talking like, well, I mean, because then they'd end up fucking, I'm sure they'd end up just getting eaten up by people and fucking, I don't know.
You don't want to make F&M too competitive, I think is the argument there. Like if you put
right.
Chandra Flame Caller promos out there, like, now kids coming to F&M are more likely to get kind of like gamed by the PPTQ level players who are like, oh, I gotta go get my tournament cards.
Sure, I counterpoint with an F&M promo being Sylvan Advocate.
We're getting there, I think. Yeah. I mean, from what I understand of it, the way it works currently is, future league-esque cards are the ones that generally make it to be printed at F&M promo level. Things have changed over the years, clearly the teams that have made these cards, but I feel like that's the feeling these days. We can still do better. Like, we're even in like a reasonable stretch right now. Like, the artwork on Rise of Tides looks pretty tight, if you ask me. But Call the Bloodline, whatever, and it's also like there's a bunch of printings of Fiery Temper, which is the one in November. There's definitely a lot of, like, why is this happening in my mind? I think we can raise the bar. Should it be tournament playable rares? I don't know. I mean, I think Tony is really the best person to ask here in terms of, is that good for the game from your perspective?
I think if the cost or the idea is that is standard is going to be accessible to players, then giving them a promo that at least has some sort of trade value. Maybe because it's a promo, the stores aren't buying it back, they're not selling it back, they're not really interacting with it, whatever. But at least they could win some extra trade value in their binders for somebody who wants to swag out their standard deck. Or maybe these cards are, like I said, close to modern playable, like Sylvan Advocate. That card, that's a very good Magic card. But with Fiery Temper, I think they missed on this one by not, like, sort of reduxing the old promo. Because there was already an FNM promo of Fiery Temper.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
I think they should have ran that back this time for the FNM promo of Fiery Temper.
If they're gonna use Fiery Temper for
right,
a promo.
Right, as
you know,
an FNM
again.
Promo, you know, exactly. Run it back again, but, you know, even at the store, I see the FNM Fiery Temper promos just like in the, you know, 10 cent bulk foil bins and stuff that. Like, people don't really give a shit about these cards. And that's really sad. Some of them are cool. Some of them are like a little bit of hype, but even, let's say one of the ones that was, here are some of the game day ones, Anguish Unmaking. That was like sort of playable as like a two of in the black white deck that won a GP for like 2 weeks in a row by Seth Manfield. Cool. Standard changes so fast that after 2 weeks that card wasn't playable anymore and nobody gave a shit about it.
Right.
And before that we had Radiant Flames. Again, same thing. An amazing premium 3-mana removal. And then as soon as the format shifted after like 2 weeks of this card being in Jeskai decks or whatever, just unplayable. So,
how about paid close enough attention? Are they, like, do they try to keep them, like, standard playable cards when they do the FNM promos, or are they just kind of, whatever they feel like putting in? are they always, like, standard legal
standard
cards?
Playable, except for a few occasions where they threw out some modern cards, like when they did Path to Exile and Seaman Visions.
Oh, right. That's right. And
yeah,
see, that's what I wonder, like, if they aren't, like, dead set on, keeping them standard legal, then, I mean, why not throw some modern, like, not necessarily, like, modern staples out there, or more modern cards, you know, something from a little while back. That way, it kind of avoids the problem what you're talking about, where, like, oh, here's FNM promo of, like, this card, it's really good for 2 weeks, and then nobody gives a shit about it anymore. You know, throw some stuff out there that's, you know, just those things that are, you know, are always gonna hold a little bit of value, they're always usable in decks, whether it be, you know, like, Gravecrawler is one of those cards. Like, it's not fucking awesome. It's just, it's good in a fucking zombie tribal deck. It's always gonna hold a little bit of value because it is a good card. It can be used in other shit depending on the metagame. But it's like that compared to some of the shit that I have seen before. It's like, why? Like,
Gravecrawler for starters is a buy box promo. And
well, yes, I know that.
For a second, it combos sweet with Call of the Bloodline.
It combos sweet with a lot of cards, but what I'm saying is it's not a top tier. I was using an example is it's not a top tier card. It's not like, you know, I'm not saying fucking throw out Liliana the Veil fucking.
Well, we've seen Kitchen Finks with the FNM stamp on it, right? And that's like a $35 card now.
That's
like
true.
That's a different era. That was
yeah, 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 yeah. I think the sweetest spot in terms of FNM promos.
So you're saying that like the Serum Visions Path to Exile wasn't like an attempt to go back to that era or to...
No. I think that was just an attempt to inject cards into the market that there weren't a lot of, but there was a lot of demand for.
I think it was an attempt...
You want to go back to what you were saying before, like, Gravecrawler's FNM promo. Path to Exile was also another promo. Like,
yeah.
Like, they can redo promos, but that was a special thing where they did it 2 months in a row, and then outside of that, they haven't done it again.
Yeah, not.
And that's why I don't understand why, like, my point, and like using Gravecrawler just as an example of a card that popped in my head, like, you know, something like that where it's like, you're not giving people standard nonsense with other art on it, like shit that like isn't gonna be worth fuck all, but you're not getting like too high in the price range. I mean, yeah, granted, like these cards, depending on later on down the road, may end up being worth more because they end up being a better card after something else is printed, whatever. That happens, but, I mean, it seems like the quality of FNM promos for the most part has been nonsense when they're like, why not? I guess this is why I started off saying in the beginning of this is like, why not just throw some better cards out there rather than some of the shit that we do get? You know, it's not like they don't know what cards of theirs are good and what cards are sought after by people. It's WotC.
Correct. And I think that the reason that we don't have hype FNM cards over the next couple of months is because we don't need them. The reason that we don't need them over these next couple of months is because we have Kaladesh Inventions. That's the big thing going on right now. When Serum Visions and Path to Exile were injected into the pool of F&M promos. And right now, Serum Visions, the promo goes for $7 on face-to-facegames.com, and the Path to Exile is $15. And I think at the point when those cards were injected was a point where Modern needed a boost. It needed, the players needed something from WotC to say, like, we actually give a fuck about your format, and we're paying attention to you, because I remember when Serum Visions and Path to Exile got spoiled as promos, and a lot of the newer players, that's what, like, finally let them bridge that gap of attempting to get into the format, or those two cards being printed are what sort of pushed them to want to get the fetch lands to get into the format. And then Battle for Zendikar came and we had expeditions for them, so it was super hype. It was a tool during that point to keep hype in Modern.
Right.
And it worked well. And right now they don't need that. They have
they have
standard stuff. So
would the allocation of those resources though really be better if we lost player rewards, you know, ways back at this point, but we lost them because they didn't want to print the cards. I mean, the mailing was more the issue, but the cards were part of the factor. If we have inventions or invention types things from Magic's history here moving forward, could we replace F&M promos in the card variety with some other way to entice new players to show up, or is that too much of a pipe dream?
Oh, that's a good question. I think one of the things that Wizards is, well, Mark Rosewater has said on Twitter and on his Tumblr, not if we're getting a new constructed format, but when. And I think that's really the next thing, the next big change that's going to be made is what our new constructed format looks like, how accessible it is, and accessibility is really it. Like, you know, card availability and card prices.
Yeah.
Well, right now, standard, in my opinion, and my opinion is, you know, some of the people playing the format now, and I talked to a lot of people who have stopped playing standard because of this new rotation system, is that it's actually rotating too fast. You can't get enough, the price point of the cards hasn't come down enough for the speed of the rotation to make it viable to play the format for people who aren't, you know, playing and winning all the time. So, right now, you know, Chandra was $70, $60, she's down to like $45 or whatever, but that's still like basically too much for a card that's going to tank out and be worth, you know, maybe $10 long term. If it's Modern playable, it'll be worth $10 long term.
It seems like a bigger problem here. I mean, I know we went to shorter standard to solve the issue of format solving or things getting stale, and so quickly we're already on the inverse side of this where it's like, I don't get to play Magic with these enough. While 6 weeks ago, it was almost like, oh, I played Magic with these too much. I mean, look at Baby Jace. Like, people got tired of Baby Jace and standard, but now are they not gonna get enough of the new cards already? And we haven't really lived through this yet, have we? I mean, what's really going on?
That's exactly what I'm saying, though, is the price points haven't changed, right? The price points are still as though you get to use your cards for twice as long. They haven't adjusted to the way standard looks now. So standard's still intimidating, and the players are feeling the pressure now of it being a shortened time by the card prices still looking the same. You know, your cards are in standard for a considerably less amount of time,
right,
but they're still worth the same amount as they used to be. So once the card prices come down and the Chandras of the set, the Chase Mythics, are only $25, and your Chase lands and rares and stuff are, you know, $7 to $8 to $12 max, and your uncommons are a buck or two, you can build a standard deck for $500. Right now it's not. It's still not that way. Like, the card prices are still pretty close to the way they were.
And you think that's going to come down? Like, you know,
it has to
be one of those things where, you know,
it has to because A, Wizards wants it to by putting random lottery tickets in their booster packs, encouraging everyone to open infinite packs and draft.
Right.
That's one reason that they tell me that they want to. Then the other reason is, with the inventions being in every set moving forward, they want
right
people to continue to open a ton of packs. So
yeah,
there's just going to be more of these cards available. It won't be so scarce. Pre-orders will become more of a thing. People will just stop paying absurd prices for cards until they all start to come down. And yeah, there's going to be a few chase cards or rares in every set, obviously, but
yeah.
$70 Canadian for Chandra was like absolutely absurd, and it's already started to tank.
Yeah.
I mean, there are a few other factors at play in terms of the hype right now, but I think in the broad scheme of things, the point you're hitting on here is that people need to slow the fuck down. Like, there's just too much stuff out there, and there's no reason for us to be consuming it at the speed we're consuming it at.
It's insane how fast spoilers are coming out for fucking everything, like how fast the sets are coming out, because, I mean, yeah, I get it. You know, it used to be, you know, things would get stale, and I get why they, you know, shorten standard, but at the same time, it's like, now it just feels like it's just constant. It's constantly a new fucking set coming out that there's spoilers for, and it seems like I could be wrong, it seems like they're pushing like advanced information a little further ahead and a little further ahead. It seems like it's, you know, we know like already this much about like the next expansion after this, and I mean, again, that also could be because of the new block structure. It just feels like we know more information.
Well, the reason they're doing like that is to try and, they're trying to make it feel smaller. They're trying to make it feel like these two blocks are actually just one big block and you're just going from story to story. They want it to feel like you know what's going on and the time frame doesn't go by as fast as it does, because 3 months is not a long fucking time for your card to like basically have potential to become obsolete. And not obsolete in the fact that they're not good anymore, but yeah, maybe they're not good anymore, and you have to buy these new cards, and Modern is not the solution to this. Modern is, in my opinion, the best casual format Magic has created at the current moment.
Yeah.
Because there's no structure to it. It's the Wild West. There's basically no metagame, or the metagame is so large that you can't really fight it or make a deck for it, or if you're trying to metagame at your local level, then you're writing down what Kevi and Tristan and Gumby play, because you know, and you're gonna build a deck against that. Or there's like 50 people who come in from out of town and you have no fucking idea if you're gonna play against
things are wide open enough.
Infect or Grishelbrand or turn one Blood Moon or Eldrazi or, you know,
which is what we've been fucking
that's a good thing.
Yeah, it's what we've been wanting forever.
It's a good thing. Like for the health of a casual format, it's not a good thing for the health of a competitive format. So having something like a Frontier format, the M15 frame moving forward, be that sort of controlled environment where Wizards has really put the brakes on a lot of the shit that they said was like not good for the game, like no more one mana mana dorks. No more like non-conditional four mana sweepers, you know, and I think they've really got their shit together since M15 and Origins, and Cons block was an amazing draft block. Triple Cons was so much fun. And moving forward, I think they're like really, there's huge potential for this Frontier format moving forward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so far though, I think it's just made a really strong format that Standard should be the only PT format, which they've been doing, and I feel like they've been justified in doing. I feel like we're a ways away from the new format. I don't think we're on the verge of it right now, because we still haven't seen what happens when this changes. Like, we haven't seen what the world is going to be like with prices that should be suppressed on Standard, with the barrier to entry in the competitive format be cheaper but change more often. Sure, the format you want makes sense. But at the same time, like, we have no idea what this landscape is supposed to look like, and the people we're looking to give us that direction, part of them haven't had a chance, and the other side of the coin are the people that make money off the game in the secondary market, and they have no reason to make change until change really comes to them.
Right.
And it's not even like I fault them for it. It's not like, ooh, they're evil and you're making money off these cards. It's like, why would you change your business model when it hasn't been forced on you yet? Continue to do business the way things work. Maybe you're gonna get an overabundance of cards coming through on your buy list. I still don't see players cracking more of this product in general just because the masterpieces are out there. I mean, sure, there's a small subsection of people that are going to be going through more product because there's more EV in the packs, because those cards are there, but it's all going to balance out, in my opinion. Sure, that's going to help the player in the long run, but we haven't seen it yet. It's still, things have to sink into change. I think this holiday season, we're going to see the benefits of that as a player, but it's still too early. And try to rush a new format or try to rush change in the way people play, it's too much. Sure, Modern to me is not the thriving thing that Toronto makes it look like. Like somehow in Northern Canada or Eastern Canada, like shit's super popular there that it's not everywhere else. Like even in California, it's where the game is super popular. Modern isn't the go-to thing people go to play Magic. I don't know. I think there's still a lot of time to be seen. Long story short, F&M promos, I almost feel like from this conversation, we can get rid of them and we could give something back to the players instead. I don't know what that is yet. Hopefully it's not stupid deck boxes or tiny Thopter models, but
yeah.
Much like player rewards cards, the drive isn't there. Like people aren't going to F&M because it's like, oh, I want to get those F&M cards. I feel like it's right. Almost a force of habit out of this point. And sure, like the Rise of the Tides card has spectacular artwork. It looks super sweet. Like I want to get one, but it's not like I need it for my constructed deck or something. And November and December, it's like whatever. But you know, maybe if you're the guy who plays Fire and Temper and Standard, which is a thing again, you're excited about that card. And you know, I can remember playing Magic 15 years ago and F&M promos. I mean, there was a different back then. They were giving away fucking Forbid and Priest of Titania and Mog Fanatic and shit. But yeah, I don't know. I think we could pretty much do away with those cards at this point. They have less impact than player rewards cards did.
Yeah.
We did away with those cards, and life moved on. Like, I'd rather see some other kind of incentive to get players to come out to Friday Magic. I'd almost rather see, like, kind of like the grind style they had before. If you go to 30 or 40 events a year and said they'll mail you something cool once a year, like, to kind of recognize that accomplishment versus here are cards no one really wants every week, and what are we going to do with them?
Yeah.
Yep.
Agree. I think that you could totally just fucking ditch the F&M promo.
It's either that or they have to make them more desirable.
Right. Which, yeah, and going through that is like, you know, I guess there's obstacles to that. You know, but they're not driving people in. I mean, yeah, occasionally, like we were saying before, you know, you see something like Serum Visions or fucking Path to Exile come up. It's like, yeah, that might change your mind on whether you want to go to FNM. You know, like David, you, for example, like, you know, yeah, it might change your mind on whether you want to go to FNM because, you know, there's a good chance you'll probably win one of them. And those things are they're awesome cards. Cool. Right on. And that also kind of, you know, adds to the point. The other point, I don't remember. I think it was Tristan. It might have been Tony that was saying that, like, you know, that, I guess that kind of advocates, you know, not like ringers or whatever, you know, people that like maybe normally wouldn't come play F&M, and then the 12-year-old kid might win. Like, it's like, oh, well, oh, okay, David's here, so we're all playing for second. And, you know, maybe that's the issue that they're trying to avoid, is having, you know, desirable F&M promos so that better players are going to go to F&M and go win those, and then the kids don't get them. And that the F&M promos can be shitty cards because they're just, you know, for basically like an extra little bonus for the 12-year-old that doesn't ever really play. He's like, oh shit, I won this fucking sweet foil promo card and it's awesome for him, but it's not really driving anything. So I don't know.
I think the sweetest spot for F&M promos and where I would like to see them would be the dopest uncommons of every standard or modern format, and they can rotate, maybe depending on the PPTQ season or, you know, what's going on in the summer. Like, if there's going to be a Modern Masters release, you could go to modern card promos, and that way, if they stay with uncommons, they're not encroaching on the value of rares and mythics and packs. Clearly, you want the dopest artwork in town for those cards, which sometimes be arbitrary and sometimes not. You know, to me, like, the Bloodbraid F&M was kind of the height of F&M promos in the more current age of F&M promos, and that isn't impossible to replicate, in my opinion. But what I'm hearing is that, you know, they make these decisions in the future. Future League, you know, Rise of the Tides was probably a powerhouse of a Magic card at one point when they decided to commission the art for that and make that a thing. And all the effort that it sounds like it goes into that, to me, it's like, all right, well, it seems like it's too much effort.
You know, I want to see old border foils. I want to see old border foils.
You want that would be tight if they brought that back.
If they're just like, let's just do like old bordered fucking cards. Instead of doing like alternate artwork, we'll just do old bordered cards. Like cards that, you know, were a big deal that aren't that big of a deal to fuck get over. You know, it's like an old bordered fucking Sheevan Dragon. Like back to the fucking roots.
Oh my god, that'd be amazing.
And inject some shit in that 93-94 format.
Yeah,
right?
There you go.
Reserve list That's, card.
Hashtag. Yeah, reserve list cards as F&M promo.
As F&M promo.
Great idea.
We'll start with Phyrexian Dreadnought.
Oh my god. But no, I mean, I could say, like, bringing back some of those cards that, like, even just aren't, like, that big of a deal, but just have a lot of nostalgia that maybe never have been in foil because they were from back in the day.
In a new foil, player, I mean, like, the only thing there is new players have no fucking clue. Like, I can even remember playing F&M when, like, Forbid was
that the brings up, like, trade value, though. Like, you know the old fucker, the old neckbeard sitting in the corner is gonna fucking, like, trade off all his fucking sweet standard shit for that old fucking foil common.
Hopefully the crazy old wizards in the store will talk to the young blood and they won't get scared off by that and we could have
yes. Or the kids will probably be like, oh, what is this? Ew. Why? This looks old. You have to use your hands? This is a baby's toy.
Exactly. Exactly. But speaking of sweet standard cards, it is the first week of Kaladesh Standard. I watched a little bit of the coverage from Star City Games over the weekend, the implications of which are already being felt in the MTG finance world. Tony, you work in a magical store. Did you see a lot of impact of this first week's tournaments? Or is there a lot of buzz in the community about Standard right now?
Yeah, there was. It's still a little, like, laid low, because the Pro Tour is really what people are focusing on, and there's a few regulars from the store who are actually headed to the Pro Tour this week, or this time, so shout out to, you know, Aaron and, Alex Neufeld. Yeah, he made it there this time. They're both going to Hawaii, and they're going with a couple of the other regular guys who go, those guys. Yeah.
Those guys.
Yeah. And anyways, so it's been kind of quiet. Prices have just been coming down. That's it.
Yeah.
Like, I saw we held a Sunday showdown this week. There was only 18 people there. It was pretty small. So that's like pretty indicative of people just like hanging out or either just drafting because they don't have their decks yet or they don't know what they want to play or cards are still just too expensive. Like I said,
right. Yeah.
A couple days ago, Chandra was $70 and now she's down to 45. So when people see that, they pump the brakes big time on buying cards. So
yeah, buying them all together when they're like, whoa.
Exactly. So
yeah, like we thought, you know, Chandra was going to be a big fucking deal and, you know, would be the shit. And when you see like a card that, you know, everybody else pretty much evaluated the same way. When it tanks, it's like, oh shit. maybe I shouldn't be buying any cards.
Yeah, so we'll see. It'll definitely like turn around coming up for sure. I know that. So yeah.
Yeah, the Pro Tour is going to be a little more geared towards probably a control metagame. Now the Pro Tour has adjusted a little bit since, let's say, you know, Jace the Mind Sculptor was in Standard or Block when that was super popular and learning the power of Planeswalkers. Yes, Chandra did not see as much action as definitely I expected it to see. It was in the sideboards of a great many top 8, 16, 24 lists, but not so much the main deck. And that was mostly, I feel, a product of the fact that Equipment's bastardized son, Cars, are so popular in Standard right now.
Cars was a big movie, dude. They're like, Pixar made a lot of money off of that.
Dude, I haven't even made it all the way through that film once. It is so shitty.
Oh, I have a son. I've seen that movie 470 times.
I know. I cannot believe how, like, dialed in kids are on that movie.
It's insane.
It's so bad.
Thank God he finally got over it. But, yeah, there was a couple years where that's all he wanted to watch. And so,
no,
yeah,
I mean,
man.
Even when Marcel and I visited you last year, it was, like, a lot of Cars shirts and Cars stuff. Like, clearly Brody was still into that film, and it's across much of the youth.
Yeah, it's crazy how much kids love that shit. So, man, Wizards was just all, fuck, why not just use Cars and Star Wars? Fuck it.
So yeah, you know, Chandra does have a weakness. It's that it built into the card itself. It mostly deals with things at sorcery speed or generates card advantage on your own turn. Usually when all of your opponent's cards are lying dormant because they haven't been geared up or whatever. Right. So we saw quite the explosion of popularity in the chopper. What is it? The smuggler's chopper.
Into the chopper.
The looter scooter.
Sure, there are many names for it.
The smuggler's copter.
I was even required to read it another time in that it fucking triggers on blocking, which just seems so absurd to me. 2 mana, 3/3 with crew 1 that when it's declared as an attacker or a blocker, you can draw a card, discard a card. So you can't stop it from dealing combat damage, so do deal its ability. And it can do it on defense. Not that that was happening a lot this weekend, but there's even more advantage there. Because of this, and I'm not saying we're at, like, skull clamp level suppression of the color blue, but since you have so much seeming card advantage out of a colorless card, the color blue was very underrepresented in Star City's tournament over this last weekend. Sure, there was a little bit of emerging, and it was mostly of the Elder Deepveen variety, as you would expect, but beyond that, it was hard to find a blue mana symbol in the lot. I mean, sure, there are some red-blue spells decks, but it was not the level I was expecting to find out there. Because the copter and the car, the fucking fleet wheel cruiser, both of those cards were super popular. What are people's feelings on that, or if they have any? Mostly Tony, because you're around people that play so much Magic.
Oh, those cards are like just sweet. Like I said, everyone's trying them, and everyone's got a bunch of pet decks here, but. Like I said, I only saw 18 people, and I saw probably 12 different decks, and every single one of them was a brew. Nothing was, I mean, I guess a couple of people came into the shop early and tried to build whatever Todd Anderson and somebody else were playing Brad Nelson. I'm sure they were on the same 75, but it was just like some green-white deck or some regular good old beat-down aggressive deck. Right. So I think we're going to see some innovation out of the Pro Tour. I think we're going to see some cool decks like before when we got like the Fevered Visions tech out of the Star City. Hopefully we see something cool like that. But yeah, Copter's pretty hype. Like everyone's really excited for that. And it's obviously insane in draft, and the vehicles are insane in draft. So yeah. The set itself has been
God
a slam.
I'm so mad that
it's
the vehicles.
Been a slam dunk, right?
I'm so mad that the vehicles did well. Just because I was so, like, against them. I'm like, oh, god damn it, really?
Well,
are you kidding me?
This looter scooter costs 2 mana, and it's a 3/3 with flying.
Yeah,
and there's a 4/3 that costs 3 mana that gets +1/+1 and trample when you crew it. So a 5/4 trample, and in limited, you can crew it with the 2/3 artifact creature that gives your artifacts +1/+1.
That's fucking nuts. Like, I mean,
that's just like a turn 3, turn 4 play.
It's fucking nuts.
Yeah, the vehicles are sweet.
Yeah, they are. They're good. And it just, it makes me mad that they succeeded. But, you know, they did well with them.
I just find it mildly frustrating because now that I played the release sealed last weekend and I had a few of these cards, they're so stupid. I'm like, I'm not even like judging like flavor wise, but it's like, so you have this car and you're playing this game about mystical wizardry and whatever, and you tell a creature to turn the car on, but then that creature can get, like, unsummoned and it's still fine, or do whatever, it doesn't matter if it's a summoning sickness, like, rules do not apply. And then
think
you
about
drive
this.
The car.
Yeah, they're like Google cars.
It's just how strong they are to open the door.
I guess, and then it's like keyless entry and ignition, whatever. And then the goal is to drive the car at the opposing mage, hopefully to hit them head on with the car that's worth like a fourth of their life total. But if the car gets destroyed while this happens, the guy that turned the car on is totally okay, and then we move on with our life. I feel like this is just a disgusting metaphor for drunk driving coming from Wizards of the Coast. I do not.
Oh, wow. I like it.
You can't be hurt if you turn the car on and drive it at somebody. Is really what you've learned.
Yeah,
your guys
you
will be fine.
Yeah, you and your crew.
The car might explode,
good.
But everything will be fine.
It's just in Magic. You'll be okay. Because it's Magic.
It's Magic. Yeah.
In real life, obviously, you're gonna die.
Yeah, don't get in and start the car because you're gonna die too.
But in Magic,
well, hope. hopefully for me, all these cards stay worth money, because on the release week, I bought six packs, three Japanese and three Russian, and I ended up getting a Nissa, a Chandra, a Fleetwheel Cruiser, the red thing that turns into an artifact where you don't take damage because you go get Platinum Empyrean, and the one mana, I can't read any of these because they're Japanese, the one mana, all your creatures enter tapped and you gain life, the Anti-Splinter Twin thing. So, like, out of six packs, I got, like, five hits on rares.
Damn, you're a dick.
Yeah, yeah, it's pretty good. I was happy with that, except I'm not really playing Standard, and one of these cards doesn't do fuck all for me. So, hopefully, somebody I like opens an English one, I trade them straight up, and then I can sell it for lots of money, because it's worth a lot.
Yeah, there you go.
I do like how WotC will ship out the foreign boxes on that initial release. I mean, they've been doing it for years, but I feel like I've seen it more widespread more recently, where there's that kind of, every store gets like a handful of boxes of cool foreign stuff, and then players get to play with shit like that. That's a lot of fun, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I'm glad they still do that. Even if you're like Tony, I'm like Tony too. I get like a few packs, and I'd be like, well shit, I'm not gonna put like one Russian rare in my deck full of English cards. So there's no way I'm gonna have enough to play with all of these. They're just fun to look at. And then I guess my goal is to sell them or trade them, or I don't know.
I usually try and find people like who I know who wouldn't have bought the packs in the first place, and see if they want to trade me like for an English one that they are gonna play with and they do think is cool, and I'll just trade them straight up and then have an English one.
Nice, yeah, man.
But it, if I'm gonna open packs, man, when I opened all the Oath of the Gatewatch, I was looking for foil Russian Eldrazi. I opened like three boxes of Russian Oath of the Gatewatch, and all I wanted was a foil Russian Waste. That's it, and I did not get one. Sad. But I did end up opening a foil Korean Nissa Voice of Zendikar. That's like a pretty hot ticket.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, you look on eBay and some of those like big hits are worth a lot of money. Like a foil Russian Waste is something like $60.
That's fucking ugly. Yeah.
That's crazy. Right?
So.
You know what else is going to drive down the price of fucking Magic cards? And that's all the changes they've made to MTGO recently, which I know probably affects almost no one on this cast.
Almost none of us.
I mean, not even Kevy. Kevy, are you full off MTGO these days, or do you still have like some burn cards on there?
I sold my whole fucking collection. I just have my account so I could like go on and fucking cube or draft or whatever if like, you know, the homies wanted to all get on at some point. Like I still have my account and that's it. I don't think there's anything in my fucking collection at all.
I feel you. No, I did pretty much the exact same thing.
When I got rid of my collection, I had already, like, kind of sold off, you know, here and there for, like, the random shit that I had that was worth anything. I had already kind of sold all that stuff off to better serve the couple decks that I played, you know, buy cards for that, so I wasn't putting real money into it. And so it was essentially just, like, a few of my decks and lands. Like, I had always just kept a hold of lands. So between, like, my burn decks, my couple burn decks that shared a bunch of cards anyway, but between that and fucking all the lands that I had, you know, fetches and shocks and whatnot like that, that was all that I had left in my collection anyway. But I just was like, oh, yeah, no, I'm done with this. And I didn't keep shit.
And you never did set redemption, Gumby, did you? You got your cards from other sources.
I used to, but as soon as they jump up
from 5 to 25, from
5 to 25, I said fuck it.
That's when Maddie, I think, stopped doing that shit too.
Yeah, I used to redeem at least two or three sets because I would get on and I would play limited, and then I would just use the packs to play more limited, and then eventually I would build up enough to do set redemptions, and then when they jumped up the price, that really hampered the amount of MTGO I played. And then the shittier and shittier it got, I eventually did the same thing. I didn't sell my cards. What I did was, a friend was pretty much done with paper cards, and so I gave him my online collection for a lot of his paper collection.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah. So it worked out. And then we both had the gentleman's agreement, like, hey, if you're going to a tournament and you want some physical cards, let me know. And then if I want to stream or play online constructed, I'll use whatever he has.
Right.
So
yeah, it works.
Yeah, I've played all of none of MTGO lately. but that's their fault, not, you know, not because of my time. It's just,
well,
because
if anything, you'd actually have a little bit of time to, like, that'd be the one thing you'd have a little bit of time to play if it was, you know,
yeah,
better than what it is.
The drive to play MTGO, I would have the time, but
yeah, the experience was playable.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
MTGO bashing. It's been a while. We usually
has been a while. Well, I don't think any of us have logged into Modo in fucking years at this point. So
I'm pretty sure it was like the beginning of 2014 the last time I was on MTGO.
So we just forgot to bash on it.
Well, there's no point in bashing on something that none of us even anymore.
Mm.
But continuing with MTGO bashing now that
it's like bashing on professional tennis. It's something that has nothing to do with any of us. But I mean, we could go ahead and do it if we want.
you guys don't play pro tennis?
No, I just don't watch it really.
Oh.
I mean,
I only play it.
I do. Yeah, I only play. I don't really watch it.
Well, I will not make assumptions about what, like, what larger stores that may be represented on this cast do or don't do. But I can tell you, especially from personal experience, many small retailers, independent retailers, and the largest retailers used to, in great capacity, acquire and break down online sets, especially in Standard, to replenish stock, to keep things on the website, to sell out to players. Times have changed, especially since I've been doing it. You know, I stopped before the $25 increase on redemption. It used to be a lot. I used to see over 100 sets come through a warehouse from MTGO Redemption a week to replenish stock.
Wow.
Things have changed for some vendors, not so much for others. But we are going to be impacted by it as players, even if we don't do it ourselves, because it's in the marketplace so much. With that in mind, you know, this change that I'm talking about is that you're going to have less opportunity to get the cards. How's that going to affect the formats? How's that going to affect the players? I'm not entirely sure yet. What it is going to do is it's going to fucking murder the price of cards on MTGO. That's for sure.
Oh yeah.
Because you can't redeem things as long. Things are trapped online as much. It's just bad news for everybody. It seems like bad news on top of bad news on top of bad news all the time for MTGO.
It's like they're trying to tank Moto. Like they're just actively trying to do it. And there's still people that will they use it for playtesting and they use it to play because they can't go out and play with their friends and stuff. And it's like they're actively trying to just destroy it so that.
But
like,
it's like, how shitty do we have to make?
Can we make this any worse so that people will stop playing so we have an excuse to just reboot the whole fucking thing and do it? And they're just like, man, these assholes keep playing as much as they bitch. They keep playing Moto for some reason. Let's make it worse.
Well, clearly for a very long time, Wizards has not been interested in supporting redemption.
Yeah.
And unlike the reserve list, it isn't exactly like a written in stone promise that they would even do it. And I'm sure in the million page terms of service, we've all signed our dicks away to them many times over.
Yeah,
we don't even know it. They just haven't come calling for them in the
middle
of the night.
Yeah, they haven't asked for them yet.
Yeah. So when people get all up in arms about that, they should really cool the fuck down. But it is show a major shift in what MTGO really should be for people. At one point in time, and you know, it was kind of the backbone of this podcast for a long time between Kevy and Maddie about how great MTGO was, how much it could mirror the real world experience of Magic. And now it's kind of heading towards the exact opposite and becoming this awful microtransaction game of the cell phone era. And it's frustrating for me to hear, and even more frustrating to know that close friends have gone through this roller coaster ride with the product to now be treated like crap the people playing Candy Crush. That is really very unfortunate. And all the signs are there. It's quickly becoming one of those things to me where it's like, you should know better. Get the fuck out of this. Like, it's only going to get worse. It's not going to get better. For the love of God, like, play Momir Vig and play Cube when it comes around. Like, shit that uses disposable points for stuff that's easy replaceable. Like, don't stop putting your real money into it and thinking that you have real cards on this thing, because we are heading further and further away from that month after month after month.
Yeah, it's insane. I'm not gonna go off on a rant about that. Like,
I could go on forever about even like my experiences with Moto and me trying to, and me getting out of it eventually and not even look back. I tried a couple times to just get on and draft, and it was just such a, I don't know, disconnected experience. I mean, fucking Maddie and I used to love playing Moto because, I mean, although it looked like it was designed in fucking 95, like it was fine. You're playing a game that's barely older than that. Like it was fine. You could still play and interact the same way. And then like as they, you know, when they kind of changed the version and then everything just started to kind of go downhill from there. It was like, yeah, of course we would complain because we're like, yeah, this shit looks like it was built in 95. And you know, they could dress this up a little bit. And then they did, and they just made huge mistakes in that sense. And it, like, it got worse. It got to the point where I was just like, oh, I don't even feel like going on and playing. And then I got rid of my collection, and I tried going back on a couple times to just fuck around, like, draft. Or I think at one point when the cube came around, I jumped on, and it was like, logging into it just pissed me off. And I was just like, ugh, I don't even want to deal with it anymore. I haven't logged into Moto in fucking a long time now. And it just, it's a shitty situation, but like they had the opportunity, you know, they've had the opportunity over and over, but rather than go the route of maybe like, you know, the more successful like digital games out there, exactly like you said, Tristan, they're basically going the route of Candy Crush. it's not good. It's not good for, I don't think it's good for the game of Magic altogether. It's not going to bring in extra people, extra players or anything. You know, it's, I don't know. It's terrible.
To try to close out the first part of this discussion, yes, at one point in time, all the way back in 2003 when MTGO started, and this was the same thing. Like, I remember when I was at the Magic Tactics conference and they were trying to launch that game, and I kept trying to tell the people at Sony, like, it was like, you can't, like, tap the people that are already tapped on something they love so much. Like, you can't, it's like,
I totally like, played that game for a minute too.
Yeah, it's like, it's like people that smoke 2 packs a day. You can't come to them and be like, all right, well, now Marlboro's gonna also sell you this new super addictive thing that costs just as much, but we want you to do it. Please do it with us. Like, Magic players already have all their disposable income sunk into Magic. They're not ready to be like, oh, I'm ready to double that on something new and exciting. And MTGO had to have that kind of backbone of the system and be like, all right, well, you're not spending twice as much and you're not having to double up on what you do because you can cash out, you can have all that stuff. We've had that conversation on this show before. Mm-hmm. What does it meant? You know, why would people do it? But it's okay because there's that FDIC kind of thing. That's what launched the program. Now, flash forward 15 years, the Magic has gone through multiple boons, the popularity is fucking huge, and the complexity of MTGO has only gotten thicker and thicker and worse and worse and worse, but they don't have to fulfill the promises they did before. So sure, start pulling things out, you know, it's a fucking game of Jenga before it all falls apart. They don't have to have that. You know, people will clearly buy an MTGO for an experience similar to Duels of the Planeswalkers, and you get fucking nothing out of that game, and, you know, the Magic Bejeweled, whatever it is. So to me, it's gonna go away eventually, especially with the way complexity moves.
Any value you can get out of it, any like actual value to the regular card game of Magic is going to be completely gone. Other than, I mean, you know, still for a while, at least you get your playtesting experience is about the only street value or real value you'll have out of Moto, and that eventually will probably go away too.
Yeah, I think this is a decision that has been subdued by the intense popularity and explosion the game has had in last multiple years. It's really kind of kept the whole redemption thing at bay for as long as it was. You know, again, when MTGO first started, you had like 3 fucking years from when the set entered standard to redeem the set. Like, I remember, you know, getting email blasts or trading messages with people about like, oh, you know, Fifth Dawn's about to go out. It's about that time. Like, you know, complete a couple sets, like get that redemption in there, get that final value out of it. And nowadays, nothing even fucking close to shit like that. And that window's closing even more now. So now we're looking at redemption's going to start 30 days after a set enters MTGO, and it's going to end when the next block in standard starts. So Kaladesh redemption will be 30 days after it comes out of MTGO, all the way until whatever, you know, Sons of Egypt set comes out in the fall, and that will be that. We're done. You know, you're done with that, and you're done with the fucking second set in the block. at the same time, so the window on redemption on that is going to be even smaller. So you're going to keep all these cards online that they can't get out of the system, so that's going to depreciate values there. It's going to, I guess, increase the value of cards in real life because not as many sets will be redeemed, but I think that's going to be a little more offset. You're not going to see as much of that because there's going to be the floodgates will fucking open on redemption now.
Yeah, that'll be an offset, I think, just by, like, the print runs that have grown over the years anyway, you know what I mean?
But it's grown with popularity. Like, we haven't seen the full effect of it for a while because the player base has been expanding to offset the fact that more products have been opening. But now we've got this perfect storm of the Kaladesh inventions seemingly causing more people to open packs, and at the same time, fewer stuff getting out of the system.
Yeah, so you basically just have... well, you have a bunch of variables. You have a bunch of unknowns that... I don't know, like, it seems like as they keep changing things, like, it just creates more variables, more unknowns, and it almost just kind of keeps us in the dark. Like, it's almost like damn near every set now, you know, whether it's them coming out with inventions or the masterpieces or whether there's change, you know, when you're looking at the changes to motives, it's really hard to put a gauge on where things even could go because everything is changing so much. The block structure, it's changing so much off of the formula that we used to know that, I don't know, I guess they just keep changing shit. Then nobody's ever really going to know where it's going.
Pretty much. And then to me, this is just bad. This is the worst for MTGO. As much as we don't know how it's going to impact real cards in the real world, it's fairly easy to know how this is going to impact the not real cards in the MTGO, and it's all bad signs. So I could say confidently, if you're listening to this and you're on MTGO, get the fuck out.
Yeah.
Get out.
Yeah, keep your account around. God. Keep your account around. Like you said, go play Momir Vig or fucking, you know, if you've got a commander deck or something like that on there that you don't mind, like, just fucking, like, it's not worth much and you just, you know, dick around with your friends that are on the other side of the country from time to time. You know, that kind of shit's fine. Get on the, you know, keep your account and get on and fucking play Cube when Cube comes around, whatever, but don't put any real fucking value into your moto collection. It's just, it's not worth it. And if you have a valuable moto collection, get the fuck out.
Pretty much.
There are good outlets for that. I went through Moto Traders when I did mine. I know I talked about it on the cast. They were fucking fast. They were fucking, they handled their shit real well. They gave me a great fucking price on my collection. And they, like, they were on that shit. I think it was like 3 days or something like that. 2.5, 3 days. I had fucking money in my account from me basically sending them the list. And it was done and done. And then, like, you know, you turn around and use that for fucking real cards that are going to retain value. Or use it for fucking your electric bill. I don't care what you use it for, but just don't use it for fucking Moto anymore.
Hockey pads. Clearly.
Yeah, hockey pads. Well, no, I use real cards for that.
Tony, are you scared for MTGO? Does this unaffect you as a physical card dealer?
Yeah, even as, like, a card store that deals in a lot of online buying, you think that, you know, if someone's online and they play Magic that they would be playing Moto. A lot of the people I interact with are strict paper players. So, I mean, I know, again, there's a lot of them that still, like, they play Moto and it's their tool and they use it because they can, but I don't really know anybody who's like, yo, this thing's the shit, why are you guys bad-mouthing it? It's just always not good.
Yeah, it never really has been.
Yeah. So it's just like a bit of a necessary evil.
And there's just times it was not bad.
There was times it served its purpose, I guess.
Yeah, necessary evil, right? Like I know people, you know, going to their first or second pro tour or prepping for a GP coming up or people who are like physically incapable of playing the game. Yeah, I get it. Moto is like a tool. It's necessary, but it is evil and it does suck and it's horrible for people to have to interact with it if they don't have.
You're right.
So we don't even, it's weird. We don't even like really talk about Moto at the store.
We don't advocate it.
Yeah.
I don't think that's weird. I don't think that's weird at all. I mean, for the most part, you guys deal in real cards.
That's kind of the thing, right? Like, it wouldn't be weird to just be like, oh, don't play the fake version of our game. Play the real version of our game here in store where you can buy cards.
Right? engaging, interesting, fun. Like, everything about it is just so much infinitely better to play in paper.
Yeah. You get your different, you know, your interactions with people. I mean, yeah, sometimes those suck live, too. But, you know, it is what it is. I mean, I guess you could equate it to, like, listening to your favorite band, you know, on a fucking CD at home by your fucking self or going out and seeing them live. You know?
Right.
It's going to be a lot better live. And if you can go see them live every fucking Friday night, then fucking do that. Instead of just listening at home. You know, also, you're having to pay fuck tons of money to listen to them on your CD every time you listen to them, and it's just terrible fucking quality, and it, like, I don't know, it just kind of kicks you in the nuts while you're driving, like that kind of shit. It just, it's just bad news all around.
Yeah.
Is somebody outside right now?
I am not outside. I don't know if anybody else is, but I am not. Is that my air conditioner?
Yeah,
might be. I hear wind.
Oh. What the hell? This thing has been fine the whole time. Maybe it's because of where my mic's sitting. I'm going to reconfigure some things. Do you still hear it?
No. Nope.
Damn, that's crazy. I just moved my mic
there
a little
is.
Bit. Really? Motherfucker.
I've got a fan on, but it's way in the background.
All right. I'm going to go turn
it on. I haven't moved it at all. So if it's been coming in and out, it's definitely not me.
No, mine is because I had my mic muted a minute ago and went outside to pee and came back and sat, like, my laptop back down, and I probably set it in a different fucking spot. Damn it.
That's Kevin, you suck.
All right, now it had better go away because my air conditioner's off. If not, then it wasn't fucking me.
Good, sweat for us.
Oh, I'm gonna sweat for you, baby. Just you wait.
This is all making the cast.
Yeah, this had better make the cast. Alright, so anyway, if
you're not, GGO sucks, and it's only gonna get worse.
I gotta ask though, cause I'm looking at your show notes here, and like, for those of our listeners that are not going to take our advice and not gonna get the fuck off of Moto, what are these other new things you're talking about here, these treasure chests and whatnot?
Okay, so,
That was my segue.
I was trying to segue to that earlier, and then I forget who stepped on me.
Probably me.
It's all one big chain of a conversation. Things are bad on MGGO, but they're somehow only getting worse because we're also getting treasure chests as part of prize payouts. Initially, I think they're supposed to be rolled out for constructed leagues, but I would imagine it's going to be implemented pretty much across the fucking board because this is really good for MTGO and business and really bad for the player. A treasure chest is going to replace a prize pack in certain events. Now, they've talked about reducing cost of entry, but that's just on the ticket side of things. As the prize pool is changing, you're not going to get a treasure chest in lieu of a pack in the prize payout. But that's not what this is about. What it's about is, what the fuck is a treasure chest? Why am I being given a treasure chest, and how much is a treasure chest worth? You'd think, with the phrase treasure chest, it would be worth more than a booster pack. But initial numbers that have been crunched by many sources on MTGO finance side would tell you that the EV as it stands right now on an average treasure chest is 2.35 tickets. The contents of a treasure chest is going to be a curated card percentage. There's also parentheses around that. A standard or modern rare per chance to drop. These are all chance to drop things for people that aren't familiar with fucking treasure chests.
Yeah, I have no idea what the fuck they are. I'm curious.
In microtransaction games, you often get gifted these things that could be magically super cool shitty commons. So after a lot of grumbling from the community in the last week, Worth and Lee Sharp, the guys that are the front-facing people from MTGO, released more data on what you can find in these things, which helped crunch the numbers to their current EV. That being, again, there's curated card list, which is like good cards you actually want to get if you play old formats or think those cards are cool. Like, again, what does a fucking MTGO Force of Will actually do for you? Who knows? But there's a curated card list. There's standard and modern rares and commons and uncommon slots you can get, which are very common, clearly. And there are also a chance to get some play tickets. And your treasure chests are going to be made up of some chance to drop of those items. Again, currently the EV on those is below that of a pack, so it's already a loss. And it's only going to go down because there's going to be even more of an influx of these stupid cards into the MTGO economy, most of which will not be fucking redeemable. Surprise, surprise. On top of that, in the initial rollout, they weren't meant to be tradable, which means you get stuck with this shit. There was enough player backlash from that in the first week of announcements, though. They've started to repeal that. They are going to be tradable as of mid-November, so you will be able to ship these to bots in theory. How much will they be worth? Clearly nothing close to 2.5 tickets by the time that actually happens.
Right.
And who knows what we'll have. But it's something they're sticking with, shockingly. We're moving closer to microtransaction world. Once again, bad for players. Who's it good for? I don't fucking know. What are we going to do about it? Nothing. Just get off MTGO. That's...
Yeah, that's really...
You were just like a sad cheerleader right there.
Hey, everybody, what is this going to do for you? Probably nothing. Go team.
Effectively, yes.
Go team, Magic players. Fuck.
It's so sad, but you're not wrong.
Yeah, you're not wrong at all. I agree 100% with everything you've said. So, I mean, what do we do? What do we do? Don't play Moto. When do we do it? Now.
Oh, sorry.
That's not a
cheerleader thing. That's a hippie thing.
I can't decipher if this is insulting to the players of MTGO or if this is just the next evolution in gaming and the next generation is used to this kind of microtransaction, low percentage drop garbage, and I should just change for them. I don't know exactly where this falls, because I feel like Magic players are wiser and generally a little bit older than the same people that are the kind of the ooh and ah of the look, I got a treasure chest or a loot chest ma kind of people. But I don't know. I mean, no one asked for this, right? Like, I'm not really active on MTGO, but no one's like, man, I really wish you'd take away prize packs and instead give me a 1 in 3,000 chance of hitting an ancestral recall. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, I don't see anybody really asking for this. I think them, you know, it's more the Moto like dev team's move to just be like, oh, this is good for you guys, I promise. And you just leave it at that. Like, not really pay attention. I'm surprised they listened to the fucking player, like, backlash and decided to make them tradable. Like, I'm completely blown away that they even listened that far to be like, oh shit, people are pissed. Like, cause it really looks to me like they're trying to tank Moto. And like, you'd think that if everybody's all, what the fuck, I don't want to get stuck with these, they'd probably just give you one every time you logged on at that point. Like, the Moto that I've come to know, they'd be like, oh, here, have another one, asshole. You know, now you're stuck with it again. I don't know. I'm surprised they even listened to that. They just kind of seem to be trying to sink the ship. It's gotten so depressing. And it's because we started talking about Moto.
Goddamn Moto, just dragging everybody's mood down.
Fucking everything up. There's got to be something more exciting to talk about. Tony, talk about something exciting, because you play Magic all the time now.
What's on the agenda?
I was going to save that finance story for later, but
ooh.
Oh, you missed the ball. I'm sorry. Two runs in for the Jays. Anyway.
Thank you. Yep.
It wouldn't be an episode of Heavy Meta without some either Jays or Leafs commentary happening.
I mean, it is the wild card game. So it's kind of like for baseball is the worst cock tease in all of sports because they play for fucking ever.
Yeah.
They start in April and they go for 5 months, 162 games. And then it all comes down to one day. At least in the NHL playoffs, you drag it out. There's a chance. There's some hemp. There's some back. There's some forth. Best of seven all the time. We don't need to sell this. Clearly our audience knows this. Meanwhile, baseball, one day.
So one day. One bad game and you're fucked.
No. Anyway. Now, if you want to hear an anecdotal story about people still trying to make a buck on things like eBay and Magic, it's a pretty good one. And again, I have plenty of dealings in both buying collections from things like Craigslist with weird listings and strange pictures, and also selling and buying on eBay a ton. So there was this thing that came up. I feel like it started the MTG Finance subreddit, but it might have moved over to the regular Magic subreddit. It doesn't really matter. I hate saying MTGO Finance subreddit. It makes me sound like a giant tool. but this guy was determined he was going to buy a collection on eBay. And the collection was a 5-row box and like a 1-long-row box. I believe it was the old Magic Anthologies box from 96. And it was one of those classic scenarios where someone has haphazardly posted photos of what used to be their collection and is using very weird terminology like, oh, this is my water and tree deck, and this is my grass and tree deck, that kind of thing, like,
right.
From way back in the day, like, maybe this stuff's worth something, haha, I don't know. And the guy who was going to buy the collection had meticulously looked at all the photos and priced out all the cards that had been made visible on the auction, and there's this, like, the long box has all these photos of deck boxes, and the first deck box appears to be a borrowed old-school red-white deck with four plateaus in it and a pearl and, like, quality old Magic cards, and that was the one he took photos of from that box, and then took a bunch of random photos of the five-row box, and in it you can see scattered, like, you know, he's, like, labeled and numbered the fucking cards. There's, you know, like, oh, here's an underground C right there, and, like, oh, here's clearly, like, a beta this or whatever.
Right.
So the guy's trying to, like, price it all out, and he says what he thinks it's worth. He ends up winning the auction for just over $5,200.
Mm.
Then he makes a video of, like, oh, here's the first unboxing. Like, I'm going to go through the boxes and see what it is. And he starts with the one that is the one that he thinks is the most valuable, the one that was taken photos of. You know, there's, like, a beat-to-shit Mox Pearl in it. There are four plateaus in it, like, two are unlimited or whatever. So it's, like, it's all starting to add up. Like, at least what's there is saying it's there. And he starts going through the other boxes in the video, and clearly it's all just actual garbage from the mid-90s. Like, and the thing that's awkward is that either someone staged something very, very well, which is not uncommon in situations like this, if you're trying to extract value from somebody in that fashion, doing it like that, or somebody, like, legitimately spent all their money on this one deck when they were a young person, and the rest of their stuff is worth whatever. It's hard to clearly say somebody was cheated, in my professional opinion.
Right.
So with that in mind, you know, there's all this talk where on the interwebs, mostly the things that I'm interested in, because this isn't a new set of circumstances, this kind of scam or not scam or gray area shit happens a lot. You know, what do you do? What's going on? What should be the recourse here? And it's like, oh, well, you know, I'm just going to return this shit to eBay and get all my money back. And everyone in the MTG Finance thread's like, dude, you got played. Like, it's all your own fucking fault. Like, ha, ha, ha. Like, get the fuck over it kind of thing.
Hmm.
Which to me is like, well, kind of the math kind of adds up there. Let's be real.
Yeah.
But the way eBay works is you could just kind of do that. Nothing's going to stop you. If you're not 100% satisfied with what you buy as a buyer, you can return shit for any reason you want, and it's entirely up to the seller to meet the demands of the buyer. So in this particular circumstance, while it's still unsure to me, having looked at the video, and he's taken all this shit down, like, he doesn't, the guy that did this does not want to know he made such a folly, clearly.
Mm-hmm.
If it was someone just selling their shit, you know, like, whatever, or if it was done maliciously, either way, is it not binding? It's like, here's a lot. Like, you bought this lot. You spent over $5,000 on the lot, but it's your lot. You go through.
It's your shit.
You bitch, you moan, you complain that you didn't find, you know, thousands of dollars in gems inside it. Okay, a do-over, undo. But the way eBay works, clearly he's going to get all his shit back. Nothing's going to stop him from doing that here.
Well, I mean, it sounds, because I don't have much experience with fucking buying or selling lots of fucking cards on fucking eBay, but, you know, it sounds like, yeah, the buyer's protected fucking no matter what. So the guy's just like, oh, well, fuck this, and sends it back. Like, you know, is, like, what's to stop? I mean, like, where does that end up stopping? Like, what's stopping from being like, oh, well, I'm taking this fucking plateau for my fucking, just for my troubles, get his $5,200 back, send the guy back this huge fucking lot of cards that's, you know, maybe missing a couple. And, you know, then you got the guy that was selling it. Like, maybe it is the guy that just didn't know any fucking better and was just like, oh, here, this is what I've got. And now he's out a few cards that are valuable. You know, it's a shitty situation altogether. Don't buy lots of cards on eBay, I guess. I don't know. Like,
you should just be really careful with it, I think. Uh-huh. Like, that's, I think, the key. Like, if people can fuck you over, they're going to find a way to fuck you over.
Yeah,
absolutely. Like, there are very few people that sell on eBay or buy on eBay consistently that are just straight up
They're just trying to, you know, sell some product. And yeah, I guess it's different too when you're talking, like, if somebody's trying to sell you product on eBay, like manufactured product, like, oh, here's this random ass toy or fucking whatever.
Yeah, I mean, if it's sealed, like, and everything else, it's
but when you're talking something along these lines, like collectors, like things like Magic cards that are fucking obviously, like, not just the value of, like, going from one card to another. One card can be, like, less than, basically worth a penny, if that, and then the next card can be worth thousands of dollars, and then the condition, like, the condition of the cards is a huge factor in that too. Like, I mean, if you get into buying and selling shit like that on eBay, yeah, you're gonna get fucked over. It's all there is to it. Somebody's gonna find a way to fuck you over.
Yeah, the best way to put it is, like, if there's shades of gray in your purchase or, like, what you're buying, you can almost guarantee that shade is going to err on the side of the seller. Like,
yeah,
we're selling it. Oh, there's, you know, this is near mint. Like, that's not fucking near mint.
Yeah.
You know, anytime you're dealing with shades of gray, you're going to have that issue. Yeah, if it's a sealed product and they can just take pictures of, like, yeah, it's new, inbox, blah, 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 guaranteed money back, like, you're fine, you're safe. The other thing is look at the seller's fucking feedback. Like, if they've never sold before and all of a sudden they have this lot and you can't see every single thing in the lot, like,
then don't buy it.
Then don't fucking buy it.
Don't spend, you know, $5,200 on a collection that you thought you were, you know.
Yeah, and then
you're like, oh yeah, I see all these cards, I see all these cards, like, you know.
It's just like social, you know, like online dating or social media. Like, there are things that you clue in on that, like, should give you warning signs. Like, if they're using, like,
a fisheye lens on their boobs, but one of them didn't take, so they've got one big boob and one little boob.
No, like, I'm not even just talking about that, but, like, even language and, you know.
Yeah.
There's, like, big red signs, like just blinking lights that should set off warnings for making that purchase. You know, if they're like, oh, this is my tree and my
online dating, huh? Online dating, making that purchase? Yeah. That's online prostitution, David.
Hey, in Vegas, it's legal.
This is true.
You know, so if you see shit like that, like, just walk away from it. Now, if you see it's an established seller, they've got tons and tons of positive feedback, they're using normal verbiage for Magic, like, you know, then, yeah, you're probably safe. So I think that this guy, like, he thought he was going to try.
He thought he was going to get one over.
Yeah, exactly. And then he ended up being the dupe. So,
and now he's pissed about it.
Yep. Because
do you think he should have to live with it, though? Or do you think it's one of those things where it's like, well, these are the eBay rules. Like, you can return whatever the fuck you want.
I think he should be able to return it. Because, yeah, he's an idiot, but he still got ripped off. So I'm not of the mind of, like, oh, well, he was fucking dumb.
But did he get ripped off? He bought an eBay auction on a lot. Like, did he get ripped off? Like, it didn't turn out to be a slam dunk, but.
Yeah, I think that's where the big argument is.
Okay, like, well, then you're talking about, like, intent and everything else. Like, I think that the guy who sold it, his intent was to get something over on someone else. So, yeah, the dude got ripped off. Now, you can get ripped off and have it be completely legitimate. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, that makes sense.
Used car salesmen do it all the time. It's completely legal transaction, but that doesn't mean that they didn't rake you over the coals. So in my mind, like, eBay tries to get away from that. Like, so if, as long as the whoever bought the lot is not breaking eBay's rules and can return it, then yeah, he should be able to return it. He's completely following the letter of the law, just like the seller was, even if the intent or the outcome is kind of shitty.
I think the big part of it too, because it's like, you, like, not the necessarily the gray area, the shades of gray you were talking about, but like the gray area here, like, especially like this in particular is you're obviously not seeing every card in the pictures that they post on the, you know, because it's a lot of fucking cards. They're not going to actually go through and take pictures of each one. But, you know, it's a different story. Like, on the other side, you know, like, okay, so if you're a buyer, you buy the shit, you can send it back for whatever, you know, if it's not the right condition, whatever, like, you know, then yeah, if it's not what you expected it to be, you could get your money back. But, like,
with, as far as on the other end of things, you know, if somebody, like, I do believe that, like, if your product is as advertised, you know, if the guy took pictures and said, like, this is a lot of cards, these are the cards that are there, you know, of course, like, if he shows you fucking four fucking, you know, near mint fucking plateaus, and when it shows up, you've got, like, different versions that are beat to shit, then, yeah, that's not what you were, that's not what you were buying. That's not what was in the pictures. But if somebody, you know, if you advertise it as is, you know, if you advertise, like, basically that's what it is. Like, you know, like, this is what you're buying. You know, if somebody's willing to buy that on eBay, then that's their own damn problem. If, as long as you're average, like, as long as the product that ends up in their hands is the product that you took pictures of and advertised, I think the seller should be protected by that too. Like, you know, I sold them a product that I took pictures of, and I sent them that exact same product in those, you know, in that condition. They received it, and then they weren't happy that they got, like, they got over on me, so they used the buyer protection, and now everything's fucking, you know, I'm stuck with this fucking product again that I have to try to get rid of again. I think the seller should be protected in that way. Or maybe,
like,
it's just me.
Here's the thing, like, the more you delve into this, like, eBay is such a weird marketplace, and there's so many things that people can do to cheat the system or cheat the other person. You know, they can ship out the item and then you get it, and you can do any number of things, like, oh, it was damaged or whatever, like, say you didn't like it or it wasn't how you wanted. You can just fucking break it and then say, oh, it came damaged.
Like, yeah.
And then return it, and, like, there's so much shit, like, eBay, you have to really, really look at, like, the rating of the person and everything else, because there's just so much stuff that can go wrong where you can just get fucked out of your money or whatever you sold. Like, oh, it never showed up. Like, that's why you have to send anything that's worthwhile that you would care if the transaction went bad. Like, you have to send tracking. If not, they can just fucking keep the item, say they never got it, and you're fucked. So it's just... there's so much of an honor system, and then you're dealing with money, so honor goes right out the window. So it's, eBay's so fucking weird.
Yeah. That's true. It is an awkward situation, because it's one of those things, like, you know, obviously, you're buying shit on eBay because either, you know, maybe it's because you don't want to, like, pay full price for it, or you get a cheaper price on eBay, or it's just a product that you don't have locally available to you. And whether it be, you know, random products or, like, magic cards, like, you know, oh shit. You know, when you look at Star City and you're just like, oh, I don't want to pay that for fucking Chandra's, but somebody's got them on eBay cheaper. Well, there you run that risk. You don't, you know, you're not looking at a reputable business that, like, has, you know, established business practices and, you know, has a name attached to it. You're looking at an eBay seller. And so, yeah, you might get it cheaper. You might get it. You might not. It might be in the condition you want. It might not be. Like, it's that gamble. You know, it's nice to have that. Or it might be some obscure product that you are, you know, would never find within 100 fucking miles of where you live, and you're just like, oh, I could just get it on eBay. It's that convenience versus, like, are you willing to deal with the shit? And when you're getting into stuff like magic cards, and especially higher end magic cards, like, you know, yeah, like, if you ordered fucking like a bunch of fucking uncommons from a fucking newer set that were fucking 3 cents a pop, and they came in and you were missing a couple, it's like, oh, fuck it, whatever. It's not a big deal. When you're talking higher end magic cards like that, that's, I mean, I guess it's just that niche thing that, like, this is a, like, eBay's a weird marketplace anyway, and that's just something that you don't want to fuck with. Like, you know, it's.
Yeah, well, you, like I said, it all boils down to you need to do everything that you can to protect yourself. Like, there are established dealers on eBay and people that you can get a rapport with and follow and understand that anything you buy from them is on the up and up. They're going to handle shipping really well. The pictures that they post, you know, are exactly what they're sending you, yada, yada, yada. So you really have to look at, like, established buyers. They have great customer feedback and ratings and everything else. Then you're probably fine. Now, if you go and you see, like, this item that's too good to be true by some guy who has, like, 3 or 4 things of feedback and it just doesn't feel right, walk the fuck away.
Yeah, don't
do
it.
You're going to get fucked over. And at best, you're going to have to go through this whole rigmarole to return it, which, you know, you're still losing time.
You gotta remember, like, these people are the ones who are in it for the chase. Like, they want to tell people, like, oh yeah, man, I bought this box of Magic cards at a flea market for $5, and look at all the Power 9 I found inside. I'm so fucking badass.
Yeah, but only Kevy does that anymore. Like, that era is mostly gone.
Literally like, on this show, yes, it happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, that era is mostly gone because people know how valuable Magic is. It's exploded. Like, back when it was first starting to grow, it still hadn't hit, like, the greater understanding of the community.
At that point, like, there's a perfect fucking example of that. We were just talking about eBay. You didn't have shit like eBay before. Whereas, like, it used to be a thing where it's like, oh, these old Magic cards, you know, I have no idea what they're worth. Even though the game has exploded a bunch, now it's the fact that there's the fucking internet. And if anything you find in your house that's older than fucking, you know, a couple days, you're just like, oh, shit, this is probably vintage. I could sell this on eBay for something. And people will look up prices for that. It's that easy to do. Back when
that's played a big role, but even when the internet was around, when people didn't understand what Magic was or had never really heard of it, they just go, that's just, you know, some old game that my son used to play or whatever else,
right?
It's not worth anything, nobody ever plays it or talks about it anymore. But now more and more people who have no idea how to play or what it is, like, they know people who do play it. They know, like, their kids play it. It's a much more popular thing now again.
Right. That's true.
And I've talked to plenty of people who've never played the game, but if I told them I played it, they're like, oh, yeah, I know that game. You know, it's much more of a relevant.
They're like, oh, yeah, I've got some of those old cards in my garage. Like, let me look them up and see what they're worth. You want to buy them? Rather than being like,
exactly.
Back in the day, they'd be like, oh, I got a bunch of those old cards in my garage. You play that game? Do you want them? And nowadays, people are just like, oh, well, let me check out.
But
and see
people still hope for that score, that, you know, that treasure trove that they got one over and like somebody, I got this box for like $20 or they just gave it to me and it's got, you know, all of these expensive ass old cards in it and blah, blah, blah. That is not going to happen on eBay anymore. You're not going to happen. If they're putting it on eBay, they're already on the internet. They're going to look up what the fuck that card's worth.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right.
You don't expect to get on eBay and buy a lot of cards and hit the fucking lottery.
Yeah.
The other thing that cracks me up is when people do those packs where, like one in every 50 packs has a foil fetch land in it. You're like, what proof do you have that they're actually selling that pack? I could make a bunch of packs right now, take a picture of it, throw it on there and say, one in 200 has a fucking Black Lotus in it. And then a billion people can buy them and I don't even own a Black Lotus.
Exactly.
You fucking
I borrowed that so I could take the picture.
Yeah. And I'm not like, nobody can prove that I'm fucking lying or breaking the law. Like, I don't even have to show a Black Lotus.
Yeah. There's no governing body of sorts.
Exactly. And I see that shit all the time. People making these repacks that have some expensive cards in it. And
people buy right.
I doubt very highly that many people have ever opened anything. We're like, oh, look, this person did a review and said they got it. Yeah, that's his friend. Like, his friend got out and bought a pack and then left a review and like, oh my God, I got a fucking Mox Pearl. Like, no. It's so easy to game that system, and there's always going to be dupes.
And then you're like, well, fuck that, I'm not going to buy one. Somebody already got the good card. Fuck
it. So dumb. But, you know, as long as there's idiots out there that are going to keep that money flowing, there's going to be people there to take advantage of that shit.
Also, to the SBU, don't use this as a guide on how to make money.
Sorry.
And that was the first time I sucked dick for crack. Y'all know that we can sneak into our parents' room and steal $20.
Oh my God. Oh. Seems to be that time of night again, folks.
Yeah, I guess.
Tristan and Tony are like, well, I mean, we talked about Magic for a while and now they're talking about sucking dicks and gaming the system on eBay.
The usual.
Ooh.
The huge.
The huge.
Per the huge.
Well, do you, like, either of you, like, you know, Tristan, you've brought up you brought this whole thing up and you brought up, you know, your points on this. Like, you know, Tony, do you have any, views on the eBay card buying system? Do you have anything that you want to add to this?
Or collection buying in general from seemingly, like, this happens on Craigslist a lot too, where people will, like, especially lure you somewhere to, like, be like, oh, I got these sweet cards, come check it out. And then you, like, start to look through it and you're like, this is just garbage.
And then it's a clown.
Like, sure, you showed me one card.
And then you got raped.
Yeah, it's a clown and you got raped and there were no Magic cards anywhere. Just a bunch of Yu-Gi-Oh cards and rape. Sorry. Tony, are you around still?
I don't think he is.
I think we lost Tony.
He's probably going on eBay right now, like, holy shit!
Yeah, dude, he's going to town right now. He's just like, yeah!
Gummy broke the code!
He left right before I said, like, you guys don't do this.
He's not practicing what we preached.
Yeah.
No shit. He's practicing what I said.
He's all, I didn't hear any of that conversation, I promise.
Yeah. Oh man, that's funny.
It's only weird because it says he's still here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm here.
And on my screen, it's like he's just looking at me going like, when I talk to you, Tony, and your face on your profile picture that's looking straight at me, when I'm just all, Tony, are you even here? It's like you're just staring at me and not answering. Like some sort of.
It's because my profile, I turned on my brand new computer and obviously did the first thing you do with a brand new computer. Download porn and masturbate.
Yeah.
And it took my picture. So obviously I was looking directly into the eyes of the camera.
God damn it. All right.
Now we know what that face looks like. Yeah, so that's good to know.
I gotta
prop good to know.
Up in front of my
computer. You can never unknow.
Yeah. No, that's, no. Damn it. I gotta find something to prop up in front of my screen now. Because I feel like all three of you are looking at me and masturbating at this point. And like, it's not okay.
I'm on round two.
Like Tony just is staring off indifferent about it. David's looking at me like, I mean, I'm sorry the listeners can't see these pictures. David's looking at me like he's like mad about it. And Tristan is just kind of looking off into a corner like, I hope nobody's coming from over there to see this because this is just a gift for you. And like, it all bothers me. Every one of these pictures, because Tony just put into my head that these are all your masturbation pictures. I don't know what my picture looks like. I don't remember, but I hope it looks to you guys like I'm masturbating.
Apparently I'm anger banging myself. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Hey,
it's David just finished. He's just proud.
He's proud.
He's like ready to accept his medal.
Yeah. There's a new fucking mental exercise for you guys out there that use Skype. Any of you, like, I know that there's quite a few of our listeners that use Skype quite often. Some of them have their own podcasts. From here on out, just picture your co-hosts or whoever you're talking to on Skype. That fucking picture of them, that's them masturbating. And, you know, see where it takes you. Yeah.
Post for you kids at home who talk to your parents while you're away at school, do the same thing.
Post your answers on Twitter. It'll be fun.
Yeah, post a screen cap of someone who calls you on Skype and what their face looks like when they're masturbating.
Yeah, because they, like, as far as, like, Tony's planted in my brain at this point, like, that's what your face looks like when you're masturbating. Or that's what, like, all of these Skype pictures mean from here on out is just like, oh look, this was me masturbating.
Yeah, well, mine's true,
As it should be.
And I'm upset about it.
Yeah.
So, I was asking Tony, do you have any opinions on this, whole eBay or just online collection buying sort of thing?
I mean, whenever you're buying cards and you're not there to look at them, you're taking a risk. So, if you have the capital to take that risk, then sometimes you get rewarded and sometimes you don't, but that's all it is, man, is like risk management.
Yeah, that's understandable.
I don't know if this guy's willing to spend $5,200 on a lot like this, and he did the math and he had reason to believe and he like barely broke even and someone fucked him, like that's the game he's playing.
Yeah.
Like you're buying and selling in a secondary market. Like if you had a message to a guy and said, hey, I'm gonna come and look through it first, like maybe you don't end up spending $5,200. Maybe you get another red flag to think it's like a scam or some shit, or maybe it's not worth your time. Or maybe you do fucking go and then you do only end up paying $1,000 or whatever it's actually worth. Like, who knows? But that's literally the fun and like the meat and potatoes of doing shit like that.
Yeah.
So if the guy's saying like, I went through and did all this work from the pictures and I still feel like I got ripped off, then like, you're playing the wrong game, bud.
Yeah, shouldn't have been playing that game in the first place, asshole.
Right? I went to Vegas and I came out only a little bit ahead. I'm mad. Like, nah, you should be fucking
stoked. Yeah, like, I went to Vegas and I lost a little bit of money. It fucking happens.
Like, you know what you're getting into.
Yeah. So. You should, you should definitely know what you're getting into with this.
Man, people call me all the time at the store and say, like, I got this collection, I want to sell it to you. And, like, the first thing
bring
I do is just start, exactly, start to get some information from them, but, like, just at least meet them. Like, get them to put in some amount of effort to show that they're not fucking around, because you're going to give them real money for not real things.
Yeah.
Like, for cardboard, for pieces of paper, you can give them cold hard cash. So really, like, you're doing them a favor in the end, even if it is, like, you know, a 60% buy list or a 40% based on condition or whatever. Like, you're turning nothing into cold hard cash for people. So it really is like symbiotic for the buyer and the seller to treat each other right and create positive experiences. But like, that's why you got to be so hands on and be involved with the risk that you're taking when you're buying and selling in the secondary market.
Yeah, that's fair. Just don't do that shit.
I don't even think this guy got fucked, right? Like, if he went through and then there was like some unlimited shit in there and maybe it's not $5,200 worth, but like, he didn't get fucked, like.
He got some money out of it, I'm sure. He right? Probably didn't get his $5,200, but yeah, you're absolutely right. Yep. Pay attention to who you're dealing with. You know, I guess that's a consensus is pay attention to who you're dealing with. And like, again, it goes back to the beginning. Like, yeah, this dude that spent $5,200 on this collection wasn't honestly trying to buy this collection for $5,200 because he's like, oh, I need all those magic cards. He was trying to get them and sell them, you know, and make a fucking profit at it. So, fuck him.
Yep.
Wow! So that being said, which one of you motherfuckers has anything else to talk about? There's gotta be something.
I mean, I think we did a pretty good job this week.
We did a good job
talking
about
supposed
shit.
To talk.
Yeah.
The baseball game is
tied. It's weird. It's like we're learning how to, I don't know, have chemistry and talk where we're supposed to and act professional on this podcast, which, I mean, God knows that's not what we're here for. Like, it's weird. We know when to keep our mouths shut. We know when to bring in, you know, topics. We know that, like, I mean, the show notes help.
Well, let me spew a little bit of garbage before.
Yeah, there we go. Spew some garbage.
So
sounding too professional.
Yeah, right. So Monkey Mealing and I, from a couple weeks ago, have decided to put some energy into this Frontier format. So we started a website, which is the most bare minimum of things of all time. It basically, we have the domain, and we recorded, the first like half an hour podcast, just like a little intro into, some of the possibilities. Like, we did a little bit of brewing. We talked about some of the cards that are legal and what the implications are and why it sort of exists. So if you guys are interested in that, check it out at mtgfrontier.com. And I'll post on my Twitter too, but we'll try and keep the Frontier discussion there while it's still developing and not really a real thing, but it is something that I am passionate about and, that Matt is really hyped with me about too. So we're going to put some energy into this and hopefully we can coordinate with some of the Haruya guys and even just to get maybe their deck lists or something like that as their tournaments are going so we can keep the buzz going. But it is something that we're going to put some energy into doing. Just on our own as a side project. So there's that. Oh, man. They all left the podcast.
What?
Damn it.
I was surprised at how short of an explanation that was.
I could, like, I went out to pee and I made it back in time and then I, like, couldn't
hit my unmute button fast enough to answer. And David hit his at the same time. That's great. This is what we do to you, Ty. We're just all, hey, here, talk about something. We all have shit to do. We'll be back.
Yeah, well, you know, fuck you guys.
But that's fuck you guys.
It's a bit of an aggressive line.
Shit. It's fine.
Shit.
So
it's getting crazy.
It's something that we're interested in. And you know, like, we've been talking about the 93-94 as well. I was out at one of the shops today looking at a Juzum gin. So hopefully I can move towards my playset of those.
Mm.
So I can keep slinging some old school spells.
I'll move you towards a playset of those.
I know you will. You're a beautiful man.
I'll cut you a sweet ass deal too.
I'll move you towards a playset of full drawers.
I'm just gonna have to trade it to you for all the Chandras.
Yo, I did open a Russian one.
Yeah, well, I did. I went deep on Chandras a long time ago. Like those fucking old school listeners of the castle know it was a terrible fucking investment. So, actually, it worked out in the best for me because I decided to buy a bunch of Chandras, and for some reason, and I don't
got
even remember.
Jace's.
What, yeah, I got Jace's instead. So, I mean, like, I tried to fuck myself over, and still didn't.
Oh, here's something that's sweet. Richard, I should find him on Twitter.
Can you call him Dick? Because this is
if you want, because he was a cool ass dick. So yeah. He strolls.
No, it's not. He's a dick, but you should just call him Dick because it's heavy.
Yeah, yeah. This cool ass dick strolls into Face to Face Games Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
And oddly enough, his name's Richard.
Was he a private eye?
Little gumshoe. Anyways, he's a fan of the cast. He had just moved to Toronto from Vancouver. That's West Coast to basically East Coast.
Yeah,
east side of the country. That's a pretty big move.
It's like West Coast of Michigan.
Yeah, that's true.
But yeah, I get you.
So he came to the store and he strolls in and he's got one of his two lovely children in his arms and he walks up to the bar at the back where I'm slinging sandwiches and he's like, great episode last week. And I was like, I've never met you before.
Thanks, man.
I was like, thanks, man. Like, that's what I was like. And I recognize faces. Like, I see a lot of people, but I know them. So I didn't recognize them. And then he tells me this story. So shout out to that. Shout out to that dick.
Hey, Dick. Thanks for listening, man. Right on.
Yeah, man, for sure. Yeah.
Go on Twitter and fucking talk to us. We need to know that there's actually people still listening. Tony gets to hear that shit all the time because Tony works face-to-face. Me and David live in the desert, and fucking Tristan is in Hollywood. So we don't ever get to hear
anything. Yeah, I got last week by two different guys. They watch my videos all the time.
Nice.
All right. So me and David live in the desert. The rest of you guys can fuck off. If it helps, like, my drummer told me the other day, or actually last night at practice, he started talking about Magic because he's gotten way into it. And, he's just all, yeah, dude, like, your name is, like, known in this whole Magic thing. And I was just all, yeah, I know. I mean, like, not to be an arrogant dick, but, like, I told you that. But that's, like, that's the best I got for that whole subject.
I had someone at the World Magic Cup qualifier when we were doing coverage in Montreal between the Saturday and the Sunday the next day, like, tap me on the shoulder in the hallway of the like, hotel convention center and be like, hey, where's the Magic event? And I was like, turned around. I was like, why do you think I would know? And they're like, we recognize your voice. We watched the cast yesterday.
Aw, that's fucking cute.
I was like, oh, nice. That's
we
cool.
Remember we used to have the
Don't touch me.
We used to have the Twitter hole. We need to have a fucking new segment on the cast that it seems to just be happening organically. Like, just like, oh, how cool are we?
I'm going to leave because this is not going to bode well for me. So.
No, motherfuckers love you. They're just all, oh, shit, Gumby, you broke the scoreboard. No, like, it just seems like we've come to this now, gents. We are now talking about how awesome we are on the podcast to our listeners. It's like, hey,
well,
you know who came up to me and said that they listened to this podcast? This guy. I'm like, oh, yeah? Check this out. Somebody else told me that they listened to the podcast.
But to be honest, dude, like, the reason
I think it's just happy that there's like at least four people still listening to the podcast.
Well, I mean, the reason that we built such a community is from shout outs at the start, right? It's just, you know, talking shit about each other. So,
talking shit.
Shout out to fuck you, T Moles. Fuck you, Slick Jagger. Who else can we shout out a fuck you to? Fuck you, JR.
Yeah. The best goddamn sons of bitches on the planet.
I know, right?
Oh.
Just love these guys.
Heck. I miss them.
Right? Fuck you, Maddie.
Miss you, Brian. Your rough hands.
In your rough hands. Dick, go back to the store. Please. We're begging you. We're begging you. Come back to the store so that Tony has somebody to hang out with.
Somebody to cast boxes against.
This is getting towards like the bottom of the barrel. I'm pretty sure.
I think that we're falling off the bus right now.
This started, like, I don't know if any of you guys remember the podcast, The Bridge. This is starting to turn into The Bridge. This is just, like, some dude sitting around the table drunk and just rambling about shit. And they were fucking sweet. They were half, like, you know, half of my motivation to just be as drunk as I could all the time on the podcast. And, you know, it's worked out well for me. But this is reminding me of The Bridge on some of those episodes where they just were kind of trailing off into nowhere. And, now we're talking about ourselves, and I'm giggling about it. Like, there's, I don't know, gotta be a city somewhere where that shit's acceptable.
I'm not allowed to leave the country because I have pending criminal charges.
Okay. Well, so, it's not gonna be in Canada.
Well, I might soon be going to college in this place, but you know what, San Diego, you can go fuck yourself!
Better the fact that you're gonna be possibly going to fucking college in San Diego just makes this whole thing better. Like it you're gonna be able to just scream this at your own city out the window.
I'm gonna have like people in the dorm like, what the fuck did
what
you just
the fuck's
say
your problem, man?
Yeah, well, wait, no, we'll be in San Diego. That'll be like the most popular line anybody will ever
That's
hear.
True. That's
because of Anchorman.
Well, because you're not only that, but you're going to be in a fucking dorm, so it's going to be a bunch of people that aren't fucking San Diego locals. Like, don't go to the fucking local fucking townie bars and be like, oh, fuck yourself, San Diego.
They'll be mad at me for a different reason than what you would think. Yeah,
just
like,
the
I'm
dorm.
So fucking sick of hearing that shit.
Yeah. Well, there's that too. And then, like, you'll be in the dorm, though, and, like, a lot of those dudes will be like, oh, yeah! And, like, you'll make friends off of doing the sign out line.
Like, yeah, dude, this podcast. Like, what's it about, magic? All right, well, see you later, nerd.
Like,
it sounds racist.
Like, we thought you were really cool before that. Like, we thought you were just, like, by yourself yelling, go fuck yourself, San Diego, in your room. And we're just like, oh, let's get the crazy guy to go out and have drinks with us. But now that we know magic podcast, just... stay here, please. Don't follow us.
We're going to have a party later. Please don't show up.
Oh, I told you, like, when I showed up, my name's Tom. You should come over anytime. Can I take that back? And my name is Jeff. Good times, fellas. I think that was a good fucking episode.
Yeah, I think we did all right.
I think we did okay.
Quality.
Yeah.
There was magic, there was drunken nonsense, like, we fit the standard heavy meta bill, I think.
We did what we were supposed to, it worked out, there was interrupting, yeah, there was drunken, there was lots of fucks that always need to be there.
Lots of fucks were given.
Yeah, I tried to fuck a lot.
And you tried to fuck a lot, too? I can see your eyes from this fucking picture.
Yeah, can you see my face?
Try to fuck a lot. Like, it's like a, please can I? And she's like, no, get away.
Fuck you, bitch.
All right, guys, I got to bounce. I want to watch the game. But all I'll talk to you soon.
Peace out, Tristan. Love you, and I will see you here in a few weeks.
Oh, he's gone. He did not even stay to listen to
this. He's like, Jesus.
Yeah, it's a close game. It's tied 2-2 to the bottom.
He's all, I know my part of this shit is done about three quarters of the episode through. I know that I...